The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the ShopTapes.com studios.
It's a good Thursday. Thanks for being with us, Brad Sesmatt, Sports360AZ.com. That's our website. AZ Central Sports. Great to be with AZ Central Sports. Mark Hyland and company. Appreciate their support. We're on White Mountain Radio all across the eastern part of Arizona and the northern part as well, and on Twitter at Brad Sesmatt, C-E-S-M-A-T. Feel good today. Weekend's right around the corner. Lot going on. Interesting topics. Interesting guests. Doug Howler, AZ Central Sports, covers ASU. So Jahi Carson, after last night's game, did not want to talk about senior night. Am I supposed to read anything into that? Todd Graham is back in town, so we'll talk quite a bit of Arizona State football with Doug Howler. That's coming up here in about 15 minutes. Michael Fabiano is going to be with us, and you're thinking, Sesmatt, fantasy football, really? Yeah, it's a year-round deal, so the combine's over with. We're going to do this before the draft, maybe, after the draft a little bit. All things fantasy football with the NFL Network's own Michael Fabiano, who joins us during the football season every week. Jason LaConfora is going to be with us, one of the best insiders with CBS Sports. Now the F word is coming into play, that the N word is out by the NFL, and a penalty on that potentially. Could it be the F word, and how far down are we going to go on this chain of events? And SB 1062, how close did Phoenix and Arizona come to losing the Super Bowl? And some things around the NFL, the number one overall pick, free agency starting. We're talking about the Cardinals quite a bit in free agency, Jason LaConfora. Look forward to visiting with Jason. Always good to have him on the show. Get us off and running. Eric Sorensen, Senior Executive Vice President of Nothing or Everything, depending on the day, has our Facebook question of the day. E, take
it away.
Well,
Brad, busy time of year here in sports, and it's going to get busier tonight because the Coyotes are back. They're back from their post-Olympic break, I guess you could call it. They're in Winnipeg. They're facing the Jets. So today we ask you, the Coyotes are 1 point behind the final eighth spot in the Western Conference playoff race.
Right?
Yes or no? The Coyotes will be a playoff team this spring.
Yeah, they'll make it.
I think so, too.
Now, I was talking to Dave Tippett about sense of urgency, and this was a day before yesterday out at the Ice Den, and he was kind of, I don't know, Tip is pretty chippy, using a hockey term. Usually he's very straightforward, very calm, very relaxed. I found him to be chippy because I think he knows that the trade deadline is not over yet for the Coyotes in the NHL. Very easily, I could see them dropping a bomb on a couple of guys here. I don't see that happening with the coach or the general manager at this point. But look, when you have new owners, you don't know with new owners. I thought it was very revealing yesterday, Eric, talking about new owners. Our Ken Kendrick interview, at the end of it, he talked about being a fan. At the very, very end, talked about being a fan. And then he said, but, you know, I have a responsibility to do the right thing for the organization, and change is part of it. Da, 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 da. It was in a way that said, yeah, Gibby's my guy. And I'm equating this over to the Coyotes. Gibby's my guy and Kevin's my guy. And we gave him an extension. But if they don't win, they're not going to be my guy.
And I know they know that. I know Gibby.
Did you hear that?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I know Gibby and KT feel the same way. I mean, that they're about at the end of the rope, extension or no extension.
So, but I think when talking about the Coyotes, there's a little bit of, well, they'd never get rid of Tip and they'd never get rid of Maloney. That sounds all well and good and easy to say, but you don't know with new owners. New owners, I've said this before, most sports owners are nuts. Most sports owners are crazy. Most of them. There's some good ones, but by and large, most of them have no idea, and this is a play toy, and if they hire the right guys, they shoot in the dark. But you cannot make the argument to me that sports owners have it all together in running their sports franchises. They're wildly successful in whatever ventures they're in. But I've covered Donald Sterling day after day. Robert Sarver. Yeah, the Suns are better now, but come on. Over the last few years, and Robert's made some good moves to his credit. But gosh, the Bidwells for years and years stepped all over themselves. Most sports owners don't get it. The Coyotes ownership group, are you kidding me? Not now. You have to give these guys time to see if they've got it figured out or not. But how many bad owners did we have with the Coyotes? A lot. So I think they'll make the playoffs, but I'm not going to sit here and have anything definitive about the coach or the general manager because you just don't know with these guys.
Facebook.com/sports360AZ is where you can check it out every day.
Let's get you caught up some things on my mind in the world of sports. Brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. The Honda Resort and Casino in the beautiful White Mountains. It is a great time of year because the rain is coming. Eric, you said it's supposed to rain for sure tomorrow. It's supposed to rain for sure Saturday. That means it's going to be snowing up in Pine Top. And the Honda Resort and Casino right by the Sunrise Ski Resort means you can partner the two together. Stay at Honda Resort, pull down the slots, have some great fun, great winnings, eat some great food, and go snowboarding, go sledding, go skiing, do all the outdoor stuff. It's a beautiful time of year up at the Honda Resort and Casino just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. So SB 1062 gets shot down last night by Governor Brewer, which, fine. Why did it take so long? Because Jan got every last ounce of publicity out of it, which is fine. Knock yourself out. Here is Jan Brewer, the governor of our state.
The bill is broadly worded and could result in unintended and negative consequences. After weighing all of the arguments, I have vetoed Senate Bill 1062.
So she shoots it down. Should sports play an agent for social change? Should sports play a role in social change? The Super Bowl was sitting there off to the side. It was the 9,000-pound gorilla in the room that nobody wanted to talk about. There were these people that had the opinion that the NFL is not going to tell us what to do. Well, yeah, they'll just take their ball and they'll take the game and go to Tampa and say, see you later. That's the way it would have worked. We can be outraged all we want. We're outraged by this. We're Arizona. Yeah, I've had my friends across the country. Brad, your state's jacked up. No, it's not. I don't think we're jacked up. I think there's jacked up people in all parts of our country. I don't look at a state and say, hey, we got it all figured out. I go back to California where I grew up. That state's jacked up. That state's really jacked up. There's not a chance I'd move back there. Here? Yeah, we got a crazy sheriff. It's fine. He's been around for a long time. I'm fine with that. Jan Brewer sits there and works the system for the media to put herself on a higher plateau. Yeah, she wagged the finger in the face of the president, and people loved it. Is Jan Brewer now in a great spot for those to support her because of Simply Say No to SB 1062? Probably so, because I'd say most of you didn't even care what the governor was thinking until this came out. And yeah, sports got worked in on it. But today, Jan Brewer's popularity rating, if we were to go around town and say, what do you think of Jan Brewer? She's great. If she had signed it into legislation, she's horrible. It's really not that hard. The Suns last night. So here's the thing on the Suns. They've lost three in a row. They shot just 39%. It's fine. You're not going to win when that happens. But it's the bigger question here. You didn't have Dragic. And if you don't have Bledsoe and you don't have Dragic, you're not going to win. You're not going to win games. What you have to ask yourself, if you're a fan of the Suns, is are we seeing the real story here with this collection of characters? Jeff Hornacek has done his best job of coaching, right? First year, he's gotten the most out of this team, I'd say. All of us would say that. But if you sit tight and say, this is our core group of players moving forward, into 2014-2015, this is our core group of players moving forward. We've got it all figured out. We've got a great group here. Do you really believe that they can keep winning with this group beyond this season? Me? Not a chance. And it's not just this three-game losing streak. I've brought this up here the last few weeks. This is a bit of a mirage. Enjoy it while it lasts. Okay? How do I know that? I know. When you're sitting there saying, oh, why do you want Kevin Love? Kevin Love killed the Suns the other night. There's not a star player on this team. There's an underrated player. Goran Dragic may be the most underrated player in the NBA this year. He may well be. He's not overrated by any stretch of the imagination. So, you know, they lose last night. I don't care about a three-game losing streak. They may lose tomorrow night to New Orleans. They've already exceeded my expectations this year. They're going to make it into the postseason, maybe as a 7 or 8 seed. They may not make it into the postseason, and that's fine too. This year was supposed to be a train wreck year. You got to get really bad before you get really good. It's the old saying. They got really bad last year. They're exponentially better now, but they're still not one of the elite teams or even a mid-level team in the Western Conference, in my humble opinion. Now, you could put Bledsoe and Dragic back there, and they're very good, capable hands in the backcourt. But you've got deficiencies, I think, at several other positions and players that are learning, draft pick that is a question mark. Alex Len's a question mark at best. I'm going to get into Danica and Richard Petty. I'm not going to do it here, but so NASCAR is in town this week. This story started last week where Richard Petty wanted to race against Danica Patrick and Tony Stewart got involved. I'm going to save this one for a little bit later on in the show. He's 76 years of age, and his claim is Danica hasn't won a thing. And so we're going to hear from Danica and Richard Petty a little bit later on in the show. I would have loved to have had that this week out of PIR. U of A last night, really good. ASU was even better. This is the best I've seen ASU in a while. The NFL talking about the banning, not just of the N-word now, but about the F-word as well. And I've got a quote from the NFL on this, from the Players Association. And Tiger Woods kind of dissed Phoenix. I'll tell you about that too as we move on. Brad Sussmat, Sports360AZ.com. AZ Central Sports up next. Doug Howler, excellent writer with AZ Central and the Arizona Republic on ASU, all things. Jahi Carson, did he leave a door open last night after the game to come back? And Todd Graham's back in town too. That's next.
For unique angles, content, and guests, check out our podcast center, available 24/7, 365 at Sports360AZ.com.
Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. Great to be partnered up with the Arizona Republic, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter, at Brad Sussmat. Good Thursday. Doug Howler joins us now. All things Arizona State, does a terrific job at the Republic and AZ Central covering ASU sports. So did Jahi Carson... I'm getting some notes here this morning. Did Jahi Carson leave the door open last night after the game of coming back because he didn't want to participate in senior night, or is this a whole bunch of nothing?
Well, Brad, I asked him. I said, you know, it's going to be senior day on Saturday. Is this going to be your last regular season home game as well? And he did kind of act like maybe there was a small window of him coming back. But he also said that I think his point was, he wanted it to be all about the seniors and not about him. Everything I've heard from the beginning of this season all the way up until last night is there remains a zero chance that he returns to ASU for his junior season. So I think what Jahi was trying to do, I think he was trying to be polite. I think he was trying to say Saturday it's about Jordan Potinsky, Shaquille McKissick, Jermaine Marshall, those guys, and didn't want any of the spotlight on him.
And that sounds like him. You know, you were there.
Yeah,
you asked him. I wasn't.
I mean, and he's always been. I mean, yeah. From the beginning, when he announced that this is going to be his last year, I asked him why he did that, because that's a little different. Most people don't declare for the draft, you know, before their season. And he said he just didn't want it to be a distraction. He's pretty much held to that the entire season.
His status, though, his stock, it's dropped. It's fair to say that, right, from what you're hearing? Because that's what I'm hearing.
Without question, yeah, it has.
So how far has it dropped from what you're hearing?
Well, I mean, if you think back toward the end of the season, some of the draft boards, and again, they're just draft boards. They really don't take into team needs or anything. Had him as a, you know, late first round pick. Some of them had him up around 20 or so. But as the season's gone on, he's dropped into the second round. Some have him high second round. Some have him low second round. You know, he slumped a little bit. I don't think you could say he's had a disappointing year. I think the issue was with Jahi. He came out early in the season and just exploded against UNLV. And you remember that game.
Yeah, he was
great.
He had
that look. He couldn't be stopped. He took that game over, scored 40 points. And that set the bar really high. I mean, people are starting to talk to him as, you know, competing with Marcus Smart as one of the best, as the best point guard in America. I think, you know, when he started to struggle, I think that, you know, guy, I mean, that would be hard for somebody who's already announced that he's coming out. You struggle. All of a sudden, people are talking about that you're not ready, and I think that got to him mentally a little bit. He's never admitted that, but I don't see how it couldn't have. You know, he has some flaws with his game. Everybody does. I think if you go through the 60 guys who are going to be drafted, you know, the 60 best candidates in the country right now, how many of them are truly ready to make that step? You know,
not many.
10 maybe? Not many. Not many at all. It's all about potential. And, you know, and Jahi's always – he has another gear. We've seen it. We saw him, he was the star of last year's Pac-12 tournament. He played extremely well last night. If he can get on a roll, I think he can improve his draft stock as the season goes on. But there's no doubt that it's slipped a little bit so far.
Do you think he was pacing himself this year? I've had that theory run by me, and I don't buy into that, having watched him play through the years here, that he'd already said he's going pro and that, look, let's not put a lot of wear and tear and miles on this body this season. Do you buy into that?
So he was playing to protect his draft.
He was just pacing himself. He wasn't playing at that. Like the gear we saw last night, I haven't seen that. He was really good last night. That's the guy that I've seen through the years.
He was a floor general last night.
Yeah.
He had four assists and one turnover, but, there was no question he was in control of that offense. And at times this year, especially lately, you get the ball in his hands and, I think he's gotten caught up into a little bit of, do I score? Am I a playmaker? Mm-hmm. When you're a point guard and when things your team's not shooting well, I think you get kind of caught up into that rut. How much do I do? How much do I force the issue a little bit? I would not call him a selfish player.
No.
There are times where I think he probably should move the ball a little bit more. He doesn't force a lot of shots. I mean, he's not a guy that you think is coming down looking to, try to go off for 30.
He didn't have swagger. Doug, his swagger was missing. And there's something about swagger, and I saw it last night. It had been a long time since I'd seen it.
Well, I think he got mad. I think people started
questioning. Well, it's about time.
And I think he got mad. But you're exactly right. When he scored 40 against UNLV, you could see it. I mean,
yeah.
You could see it at the beginning of the second half when they were down. He realized, okay, I'm going to have to take this game over to win. And he just had that bounce to him when he came down the court, like, you guys can't do anything to stop me. We've seen that in the Pac-12 tournament last year.
The game at Washington.
Washington,
yeah.
We saw that. We haven't seen that a whole lot this year. And it's really, it's kind of surprising because he does have that extra gear. Maybe he's finding that right now, and that would be a tremendous thing for Arizona State going forward, because obviously this is where, this is where you need that. But it seems like when he plays well, Arizona State's difficult to beat. And also a lot of that has to do with his perimeter shooters, too. I mean, when Jahi is penetrating into the lane and Jermaine Marshall and John Gilling aren't hitting their shots, it makes it a lot easier on the defense to stick inside on him.
No, I mean, I think they're a tough out. If they play like they did last night, now part of it, it's Stanford. I get that. But man, you have a big that's going to get drafted from what I'm hearing late second in Baczynski. The fact that he's hitting free throws from one NBA scout told me that's a big deal for us in our league. Now we don't see that out of the big man. And I think that when Marshall is able to be out on a wing and stretch the floor and Gilling plays with his head, not in the clouds, and can actually figure out how to break a press and not get himself into trouble. Jacobson's a nice little role player. There's a good amount of balance is what I'm getting to, that they could be a tough out in March.
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on the matchups, of course. But, Jermaine Marshall gives them a guy who's had played in the NCAA tournament, although it was early in his career. But, he's hit big shots in big games. And then you have a guy like Jahi who can, maybe win games down the stretch for you. Jordan Baczynski, as you mentioned, has been playing a lot better. It's easy as it sounds. It comes down for this team. Arizona doesn't have to shoot well to win, obviously.
No.
They can win with defense and rebound. Arizona State does need to shoot well to rebound or to win. I think I looked it up the other day. I think they're now 17-0 when they just shoot 43%. Just 43%, they're 17-0. Usually that number is around 48, 49, even 50. But if they just shoot 43, they're going to win.
That's a great stat. Doug Haller with us, AZ Central Sports, of course, Sports 360 AZ. We are on AZ Central every day. Appreciate the partnership with them. And, of course, good to catch up with Doug as well. Todd Graham comes off vacation. Let's switch over to football. Your general thoughts on where he is. I know you wrote about it today, but where he is with this team and the expectation of, oh, man, he's lost so many guys. This is going to be a tough season ahead.
Somebody once told me in the athletic department that when Todd comes back from vacation, that you can almost expect him to knock on your door and take a seat because he's going to have a million ideas that he wants you to pursue. And that's kind of where he was when we met with him. The beat reporters met with him on Tuesday. I mean, man, he was fired up. He talked for about 90 minutes.
Did he take a breath?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was maybe 30 minutes before we even asked the first question. he was wired. He really was. But yeah, I mean, his big thing is like, you know, man, the season's ended, and all I've been reading about and hearing about is, man, you lost Will Sutton, you lost Connor Bradford, Marion Grice is gone, Evan Finkenberg, you know, you lost all this. You know, and he said those guys are great, and they laid the foundation for the program, but the message he wants to get across, it's very, it sounds exactly Ty Graham, but he said expectations shouldn't change. You know, if they got to the Pac-12 championship game last year, their starting point this year should be to win the Pac-12 championship game. And, you know, he's excited. You know, they have 9 defensive starters to replace Brad, as you know, and, you know, he likes the young talent that they have. He thinks they can be just as good defensively. I'm not sure that's possible because, you know, in the Pac-12, those offenses are pretty dangerous. And, you know, even though I think ASU does have good young talent, there is something to be said for experience at this level. But no question about it, he's fired up. He likes the way the direction the program's going with the recruiting classes, the last 2 that they brought in. He feels like that everything's shaping up in the right direction.
Away from that, you have a new athletic director. How's the new athletic director and coach work hand in hand? Is that a story worth watching?
Well, anytime you get it in college sports, anytime you get an athletic director that, you know, didn't hire a football coach, didn't hire a basketball coach, then yeah, it is something to watch. But, you know, really, I thought it was very interesting that during the time when Steve Patterson left and when Ray Anderson was hired, that ASU made some huge decisions with its football program, you know, giving Mike Norvell the raise that they did, making him one of the higher paid offensive coordinators in the country, you know, bringing in Keith Patterson. You know, they lost a guy that was on the lower end of their staff payroll and brought in a guy that's now at the top. And, you know, these are decisions the ASU hasn't always made.
Right.
And that shows me, you know, above the athletic director, that they have the support of Michael Crow. And, you know, Michael Crow's always been a guy that's kind of been against, you know, paying a lot of money for coaches in the past. And, you know, it's not just an athletic department change. It's been a university change that we've seen at ASU in football over the last couple of years.
That's good insight there. I appreciate your time as always. Stay well. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad.
Doug Haller, AZ Central Sports. And, of course, he does a terrific job. Has a big column today on Todd Graham coming back and quite a bit that you can check out on that content side. On the other side, so the combine's done and fantasy football guys already wanting to know who to look at. And yeah, it's coming up on March, but it's a year-round deal now. Michael Fabiano with the NFL Network, our fantasy football insider. It's great to have him as part of what we do. He's the best in the business at the NFL Network. He joins me next. And then Jason Lockenfora. I'm Brad Sismat.
React and interact to our Facebook question of the day. Like our page at facebook.com/sports360AZ. Giving you fantasy football insight you can't get anywhere else. With NFL Network and NFL.com fantasy expert Michael Fabiano, here's Brad Sismat.
Michael Fabiano joins us, NFL Network Fantasy Football Hall of Famer. Always good to have Michael on the show. Yeah, the combine just wrapped up. First of all, are you okay? Eric told me a few weeks ago that you got hit by a bike or something, or something happened. Are you okay?
I'm slowly recovering. I can tell you one thing though. Part of the accident, I suffered a grade 3 concussion.
Wow.
And I will never, ever, ever question any football player who had a concussion, because these things are not fun to come back from. That is for sure. But yeah, I'm getting better. I'm getting better slowly but surely.
Grade 3, man.
Yeah, I was a total freak accident. But
you weren't surfing, were you? I mean, you're Southern California, right?
I was not. I have a thing about sharks. I will not go into the water, but I will walk on the beach. And unfortunately, there's a lot of bikes on the beach also, and from what I've been told, that happens more often than you would think, where you have biker versus pedestrian accidents. And I caught the worst end of the one that I was in.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you're here, and you know, I was thinking about you. We don't send, you know, Eric sends cards. I should have probably sent you a card, but
no, it's all good. It's all good.
All right, all right. So let's get on to the stuff that matters here, and not that your health doesn't, but the stuff that you want to talk about. And that's the combine now comes and goes. We're in off season. Fantasy football guys don't just shut it down. The ones that are really good, the ones that win their leagues, they don't shut it down, do they?
Oh, no, no doubt about it. The NFL and fantasy football is a 365-day-a-year sport slash hobby at this point, so you need to be paying attention to what's going on around the league, especially starting in a couple of weeks when you have free agency, which begins March 11th, and so many different fantasy implications are going to happen when teams start not only signing players but releasing them.
So in a league right now, I'm getting a lot of questions about leagues to be in already, people wanting to know leagues to jump into and how to manage their off season. If you were to give a top two or three what to do in your off season managing of your team, what would it be?
Well, the first thing that I would do is keep and update my own rankings. You can get rankings on NFL.com for myself, Adam Rank, Akbar Bajabiamila, but it's always good to have your own rankings too. To keep tabs on. A good example here is for the Tennessee Titans. It looks like Chris Johnson's going to be released. That's not set in stone, but it's expected. Maurice Jones-Drew, do we expect him back with the Jacksonville Jaguars? I don't know at this point. So player values are going to change, and you really should know what teams are releasing or signing which players. Riley Cooper re-signed with the Eagles today, although that's not a huge, huge move from a fantasy perspective. I'm more interested to see what they do with Jeremy Maclin because that could crowd that wide receiving core in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
But keeping tabs on player movement is pretty huge. And also, keeping tabs on how that player movement is going to affect the depth at each of the top four positions in fantasy football, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and tight end. I would argue that the quarterback positions are going to be deeper this season than it was last season because you've got guys like Teddy Bridgewater and Johnny Manziel, Blake Bortles that are going to be coming into the league, and we've seen quarterbacks come in as rookies and make a pretty significant impact. Cam Newton, Robert Griffin III, Andrew Luck, Russell Wilson. So if these guys coming into the league deepen the position, well, that's going to fall right into your draft strategy too, which, of course, you know me from last season and for most of my career doing this, I always wait on quarterbacks. And because the depth is going to be even greater next season,
mm-hmm.
I'm not changing from that philosophy.
Well, and also, Michael, I think you have to look at where coordinators go. You know, you look at Minnesota.
Oh, no doubt about it.
You look at Minnesota now, and everybody wants to throw and has thrown. You talk about players making an impact as rookies. It's negatively, too. Christian Ponder gets thrown under the bus. And then Minnesota goes out and gets Josh Freeman. And so I'm just looking over there, running backs over here, you know, Rashard Mendenhall, I don't think he's going to be here. And Andre Ellington, Bruce Arians has already said, is going to have a bigger role. So I get what you're saying. And you can't just sit down with a book on August 1st and say, I have a draft in 2 weeks. Let's figure this out.
No, no doubt about that. And when you speak about Minnesota, you have to mention North Turner.
Yep.
Now, Turner may not have the best resume as a head coach, but if you look at him as an offensive coordinator, he produces players who score fantasy points. Look at Josh Gordon last season. I mean, he was fantastic. And he did it without a significantly good quarterback under center also. Now, Cordarrelle Patterson becomes one of the biggest sleeper-slash-breakout candidates in fantasy football for next season. He is going to be a very popular wide receiver selection in a lot of fantasy drafts as a guy who's going to outplay his draft position. Adrian Peterson, even though he is getting a little bit long in the tooth, we all know the guy is like a cyborg, and he's going to see more passing receptions out of the backfield in Turner's offense. He wants to get him open in space a little bit more, and barring any sort of setbacks that AD has from his groin, well, I think he's going to be a top three pick. You look at Jay Gruden going to Washington. Andy Dalton last year finished fifth in fantasy points at quarterback, fifth. I mean, he was really inconsistent, but he had some huge games. Imagine what he is going to do, Gruden, that is, for the value of Robert Griffin III. Robert Griffin III could end up being a great value in fantasy drafts next season. So you're absolutely right. These are some of the things that fantasy owners are going to want to keep tabs on. Not only player movement, not only the draft, not only the results of the combine, of course, which just wrapped up, but also coaches, coordinators, and their effect on players.
Michael Fabiano, NFL Network with Brad Sussmat. You've got a special coming up too, right?
We do. We do have it. Remember, the free agency period starts March 11th. March 11th and 12th, the NFL Network is going to have wall-to-wall coverage on all the free agent movement. And on March 13th, NFL Fantasy Live is going to come back for a special free agent program. So be sure to check that out.
Who helped themselves at the combine? Let me put it this way. Best combine prospect for fantasy football owners.
Here's the thing. When you talk about wide receivers and quarterbacks, you're talking about a very small percentage of rookies who make a major impact. Now, the quarterback position has been better lately, but last season, Geno Smith was the 20th rated quarterback in fantasy and the top rated rookie quarterback. But last year's class, from a quarterback's perspective, really wasn't that great. So if Blake Bortles ends up going to the Houston Texans and becomes the starter, he's probably going to get drafted in leagues. Johnny Manziel, the same thing. If he goes to, say, the Cleveland Browns, really it doesn't matter where he goes if he's going to be given a chance to start. That guy is going to be worth a late-round pick in redrafts because not only can he throw the football, but he can run it. And we've been doing fantasy for the last couple of years together, Brad. You know I love a quarterback who can run with the football.
Yep.
And Manziel rushed for over 2,000 yards in two seasons at Texas A&M and had over 20 touchdowns on the ground. So he is going to be very intriguing wherever he goes. But when you're talking about rookies in fantasy, you're talking about running backs. And last year, we had several rookie running backs who made an impact, like Eddie Lacy, like Gio Bernard and Zach Stacy, so to name a few. So you're going to be looking at guys this season who end up in spots where they're going to be given an opportunity to succeed. So maybe a Carlos Hyde, Jeremy Hill, Bishop Sankey, maybe Trey Mason, of course, out of Auburn, and then Kadeem Carey. Out of Arizona. So depending on where these players go, you could see some of these rookies make an impact. Cleveland's going to need a running back. We already know that. If Jacksonville releases Maurice Jones-Drew, they're going to need a running back. If the Titans let go of Chris Johnson, they're going to need a running back. So there's going to be more than enough opportunities out there for rookie running backs. And rookie running backs, that's typically the position that makes the most immediate impact in fantasy football.
Yeah, I mean, you've thrown a lot out there that I'm even wanting to digest on. Kadeem Carey's carried the ball so many times down at U of A that I just don't know that there's going to be a long shelf life for him. And running backs in general, we don't see them being taken high anymore, and we don't see them stick around very long anymore. But for that 1 or 2 years that you can get out of them, if you get lucky, you have an Adrian Peterson who comes along. There's that. And then on the Manziel thing, it's if he goes to Jacksonville, Michael, he gets his head kicked in. I think if he goes to Houston, he has a better chance of succeeding. If he goes to Jacksonville, gets his head kicked in from a fantasy standpoint, I think he's going to get beat up pretty quick. That's the problem with him.
Yeah, they have some offensive line issues in Jacksonville, no doubt about that. And they have some question marks in their offense, too, because you can argue their most dynamic player is Justin Blackman, and he's been suspended indefinitely. We don't know when and if he is going to be coming back. So you're right. So a lot has to do with where a player goes. So opportunity is probably the number one topic of conversation for a player outside of his own skill set. But also, what kind of team does he have around him? That's also a pretty big topic and a pretty big question mark. So if someone like Manziel goes to Cleveland, I'm going to like him more than, say, if he goes to Jacksonville, because Cleveland, their offensive line is not bad at all. They're going to improve at running back, and they have Josh Gordon. So that definitely has something to do with how a player's value sort of turns out here from a fantasy perspective. And that's one of the reasons why you need to keep tabs on what's going on right now, because you don't want to be left sort of in the dark when July and August come around and you're looking to draft a championship caliber fantasy team.
As always, I appreciate your time. Get better. You sound like you're on the road to recovery. Appreciate it as always. Thanks.
All right, my friend. Take care.
It's Michael Fabiano, NFL Network Fantasy Football Hall of Famer. They have their Fantasy Football Free Agent Show on March 13th, right around the corner, with NFL Free Agency. It just doesn't stop. even on the fantasy football part. It's like being a trader on stocks. You can't just take away 6 months and say, oh, I'll come back around on it. I mean, you could, but the ones that really are successful with this, it's a year-round deal. Up next, Jason LaCanfora, NFL on CBS Insider. So how close did Arizona come to losing the Super Bowl even before Jan Brewer shot down SB 1062? Was there anything to that, that just the fact it was being discussed had the NFL upset? And the NFL cracking down on the N-word and now the F-word and Cardinal offseason needs too. That's all straight ahead with Jason LaCanfora. I'm Brad Sussmat, Sports360AZ.com. AZ Central Sports. Appreciate the partnership with the Republic. Of course, White Mountain Radio and on Twitter at Brad Sussmat.
For in-depth, unique coverage from the high schools to the pros, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
Brad Sussmat with you, Sports 360 AZ on Arizona Central, AZ Central Sports. Appreciate the partnership with the Republic, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter at Brad Sussmat. Jason LaCanfora joins us now. It's always good to catch up with the NFL on CBS Insider because we sit out here in Arizona and we always end up coming in the middle of controversy, it seems. Doesn't matter if it's sports or politics, religion, right, whatever. So how close did Arizona come to losing the Super Bowl yesterday, Jason?
I mean, it's hard for me to say because I don't know the inner workings of the politics there. And you know what I mean? I don't know how dead set they were on trying to go forward with this whack job law. but there's no way that the NFL was going to put a Super Bowl. And this, remember, this is a year we're supposed to be Super Bowl and Pro Bowl together,
right,
in all likelihood. And that location, given that sort of stance, especially at this point in NFL history where we've seen sort of the convergence of a lot of cultural things here with Michael Sam coming out and in the wake of the Wells report and at a time when the league is working very closely with the Fritz Pollard Alliance to instill a more respectful workforce and workplace environment and to eradicate certain language possibly from NFL facilities and to create a culture that's more open and embracing of others who may not fit the quote-unquote norm, they weren't going to get a Super Bowl.
Would it have been, if she had signed it at 5:45 last night into law, by 6 o'clock would the game have been gone, or today would it still be up for debate? Was it that? My point is, was it that far down the road?
There's a lot of logistics that are involved. I mean, if I'm going to play PR guy here, I would think the league would put out a release right afterwards saying, we strongly take issue with what the Arizona state legislature and the governor have put into law.
Mm-hmm.
We are looking into all means of moving this Super Bowl, and we have every intent in playing this game in an environment that is more culturally sensitive, you know, to others, including our players, something like that. And then, you know, look, poor Frank Stipovich at the league office would then have an unbelievable daunting task of trying to do all the things that are already on his schedule, like more games being played abroad and possibly moving a Pro Bowl and all these, all the preparation that's already going in to the regular league calendar, getting the draft off the up and going, league meetings in a month. On top of all that, they'd have to figure out moving a Super Bowl. But I can tell you this, I could count on 10 hands the number of cities that would want it.
Sure.
You know, it's not like you would have difficulty finding venues that are open that time of year and hotels that would work together to create a conglomerate and an area where we're going to work together to ensure we have enough rooms here, and we're all going to make a lot of money off this, so let's dive in there.
I mean, there was a notion out here of, from some fans, well, the NFL's not going to tell us what to do. Well, let me fill you guys in on something. Yes, they are. If she signs this, it's gone. Don't give me this, well, they can't pull a game together, we're already down the road. There was a lot of naivete, I thought, out here.
Well, and look, the NFL's not saying anything. You can do whatever the hell you want. We're just going to take our ball and go somewhere else. I mean, NFL isn't saying you can't do this. I mean, if you've got the votes and you want to go this route, Godspeed. But there will be ramifications. That's part of life. And so, you know, and look, I don't think it would have been just the NFL. I think there's plenty of other convention groups. I mean, I don't know what it would have done to their economy. But I can't think it would have been good.
No. I mean, look, there's a national title game the year after here in college football. They're trying to get a Final Four here the year after that. We have a NASCAR race this weekend. We have two NASCAR races out here. So my point is, what you're saying is spot on. It would have had such a domino effect. Fortunately, it didn't happen. Let's move on. N-word, now F-word. How far is this going to go? And do the referees already have too much on their plate to be monitoring language on the field?
They have a lot on their plate. I don't know that this creates anything extra. I mean, it's not like your brain's working and your ears stop functioning. You know, I mean, you hear what you hear. I don't think they want them running around, you know, with Whisper 2000 or whatever, trying to lean into huddles or, you know, mic guys or bug guys. But, you know, certain instances, especially the one with the Redskins this year with Trent Williams, where, you know, he was using, and he's African-American, and the official, Ellison, who he was aiming at, were African-American, but they're men of a very different age and a very different background. And have lived through a very different reality in regards to the civil rights movement. And there was a real groundswell within the league office and within the officiating department that it was despicable that Trent Williams got away with this and Ellison was held accountable. So I think it's a couple of different instances that are behind this. I don't know that it creates an undue rigor for the officials. Frankly, I think the sense I got from the officiating community is, you know, if the league office isn't going to, don't have the cojones to wait in on this stuff, then yeah, let us make it automatic on the field. It's not even a guess. Make it automatic. And the Fritz Pollard Alliance, that's what they're pushing for, is doesn't matter context, doesn't matter whatever. We hear it, you get 15 yards. You do it again, you're ejected. Whether this happens or not, I can't tell you. The competition committee will have to get together and meet. Then they'll have to present a recommendation to the owners. And then at the end of October at the league meeting, the owners would have to vote 2/3 in favor of it. That's a lot of things that have to happen between now and then. But I do think at the very least we're going to see much more stringent and much more tightly worded workplace harassment type materials distributed to teams from the league office that are going to be much more specific and much more weighted as to potential penalties for any kind of the language and behavior that we saw throughout that Wells report regarding the Miami Dolphins offensive linemen.
Yeah, well, and it brings up the whole question, and it's not just this, but what we saw here the last few days, and I've been talking about on the show quite a bit, and that's where does sports play a role as an agent for social change? And I'm comfortable with what is going on. Are you comfortable with where the NFL, whether it's 1062 language, are you comfortable with social change coming from the NFL?
I'm certainly comfortable with forward thinking institutions and corporations and conglomerates or what have you. This thing in Arizona to me is a no brainer.
Yeah.
That one is like, I mean, we've already had national laws in this country that have gone a long way to trying to deter that exact kind of behavior. I don't know. I mean, who's going to come out in favor of that? I mean,
what, no, there were people out here. There were people.
Entity would have come out and been like, "Yeah, that's great. Let's do that in 49 other states." You know
there
what
were
I mean?
People out here that were in favor of it out here. I was like, "Oh
no, obviously." But I'm saying, like, what national? Like, I can't imagine Pepsi and ExxonMobil and whoever. You know what I mean? Coming out with ads saying that's, you know, what a great job Arizona's done. We're going to bring more of our business there because they're so ahead of the curve. You know. So I don't know how much this is social change for the NFL and how much it is just, like, it's also sound economics. I mean, you're not just playing to Arizona. You're playing to the entire country. I mean, if you put that on a national platform, a law like that, I can't imagine. I mean, I can't imagine how many senators would even come out and support it. You know what I mean? It just seems like such an anomaly to me that I don't even know if it's fair to call the NFL opposing that social change. I mean, I just think it's common sense.
Jason Lockin for NFL on CBS Insider. A couple other questions. I'll let you go. You brought up the Miami Dolphins situation. The incognito thing, it was him to his own Ferrari with his own bat. Is that what we're hearing now?
I don't know.
This isn't going to end well.
No, it's not going to end well for anyone.
No.
I mean, everyone is headed, is skidding down a downward path. I mean, can Jonathan Martin find a place to play? I think he will. The rest of those offensive linemen, John Jerry, I think he'll never play another snap. Richie Incognito will never play another snap. The offensive line coach will never coach another snap in the NFL, I don't believe. You know, Mike Pouncey, that's a tricky one. He's the best player on that football team. But can they step up and reward him with a contract extension in light of all, you know, of his role in all this? Their head trainer has already been fired, and Commissioner Goodell hasn't even stepped in with his punishments, which I think will be sweeping. I think that team will lose draft at least a draft pick. I think that team will be fined a ton of money.
I think Richie Incognito will even if he wanted to play, A, nobody's going to sign him, but B, I believe he'll be, if not suspended, the commissioner will send such a chilling effect about what he thinks of Richie Incognito that it'll probably seal his fate. You know, it's unfortunate. I don't think there'll be any winners. We'll see if Jonathan Martin can put things back together and find a place to play somewhere. I think in time he'll be given an opportunity, but will he be able to overcome this mentally? You know, that's a lot to ask, and we'll just have to see.
Before I let you go, the Cardinals, we're hearing Brandon Albert's name out here. Carlos Dansby sitting over there. We'll see what happens on his front. Fitz's contract gets reworked, but there's a big number around Larry Fitzgerald next year. What do you make out of the Cardinals and player personnel out here?
I'm a big Steve Keim fan. I am. I thought he was balling on a budget last year. He didn't have a whole lot of means to do a lot of things, and he actually had to sort of cut the fat in a lot of areas, and they came out of it a better team on the field and positioned better moving forward cap-wise and what have you. I mean, to be able to get anything for Levi Brown, I thought was sage. I was skeptical of the Carson Palmer thing at the time. It obviously has worked out, and I think, you know, he's got another year or two in him with Bruce Arians. They had a lot of injuries in the offensive line, which hurt him, because I thought they made some upgrades there as well. But, yeah, I mean, you know, a Brandon Albert, a Eugene Monroe, do they make sense? I think at the right price. There's such a dearth of tackles that both those guys may end up getting fairly widely overpaid. So, you know, we'll have to see how that emerges. But I think they're on the upswing. I think they'll continue to get better. There's such a belief there in Coach Arians.
Yes.
That guys, I think, a lot of times play over their head for him. And I don't see that ending anytime soon. You know, they've got a bright young cap guy there in Mike Disner, and he's seen as a rising star among a lot of people. They're very creative in how they can move their money around, even if their budget isn't the biggest in the league. So I think Cardinals fans have a lot to feel good about, and sort of them building up some real organizational and institutional strength, which hasn't always been the case there.
Good stuff as always, Jason. Appreciate your time. Thanks.
You got it. Thank you.
Jason LaConfora, one of the best in the business, NFL on CBS Insider. The balling on a budget. I like that. That's a good way to put it. Maybe you should give Steve Keim a shirt that says that. Balling on a budget. Take that. This segment of the show brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. So today I'm going to see General Manager Tim Hovick. I'm going to head on out and we're going to meet up for lunch this afternoon and have a good time getting caught up on things. I know that the sports scene is going to be talked about quite a bit. He's involved with the Diamondbacks, involved with the Cardinals, ASU. It's always fun to talk what's going on in the Valley and in the state as well with the sports scene. But Tim's also going to want to talk about what's going on at the dealership, and that's great. I've been out at Santan Ford the last couple of weeks. Stop on in. I was there over President's Weekend. It was packed. Busy, 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 busy. And I just stop in to visit with the guys from time to time. They all like to talk sports. For me, driving the Fusion, so today it's going to be meeting with Tim. Then it's going to be downtown at a meeting. Then it's going to be over Grand Canyon University tonight. Then it's going to be at ASU tonight. I'm going to be a hoopaholic tonight. I'm going to go see some college ball and then some high school ball tonight. And that's what I do. I go, go, go. And I do it in the 2014 Ford Fusion. How about you? Are you in a vehicle that gets you to the places you want to go to and you feel good about it? Or are you like dreading it, saying, oh, come on, I don't want to be in this? The Ford Fusion, the 2014 Ford Fusion from Santan Ford. Santan Ford just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista. Santan Ford, it is all about you. We have PIR this weekend, and Danica Patrick and Richard Petty. I'm going to get into that a little bit. And Tiger Woods. So Tiger, actually I have about a minute here. Tiger is very pleased to be starting his season today on the Florida Swing. He said that the real season is now starting. He only has 0.79 points in the FedEx Cup standings. He's tied for next to last right now in the FedEx Cup. Next to last. But the fact that he demeans what's going on out here. He played over at Torrey. He didn't make the cut there. He's at the Honda Classic on the Champions Course today. Great course. But don't start saying that we don't matter out here on the West Coast Swing. I understand that now the golf season starts much earlier. There's stuff going on in the fall now. And I understand you want to be ready for the majors. But I'd like to see Rory and Tiger and Phil. We didn't see any of them down at Match Play this year, the Accenture. It's probably the last year down there in Tucson. And we're never going to see Tiger again at the Waste Management. But don't take away from the tour out here on the West Coast. I was not happy with that. It makes me kind of grumpy. Sports360AZ.com, where Arizona-centric college, high school, pro. Plenty of content up for you on our site. Appreciate you being with us on a busy Thursday.